You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 166 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Ride TV. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
Merry Christmas, everyone. On today's show, we're spending some time with Mike McMahon of Bourbon Lane Stable to learn why this partnership emphasizes aftercare and even named a bourbon after one of their retired racehorses. Then we chat with Aaron McDonald of New Vocations Ocala Branch for a new training tip and adoptable horse of the week. And we have one special guest for the holidays. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York.
And this is Lee Beamer in Withville, Virginia, and you're listening to Retired Racehorse Radio. Kristen, how are you today?
I am spending a whole lot of money.
Yes, it was a very big day for you. Do you want to tell...
I know everyone's going to be like, happened. She got a new horse. I did not. I did not get a new horse.
But it's potentially the gateway to more horses. So.
This is true. Yeah, this is like a really long con, like super escalation of this horse thing. So today we closed on a new house, which I don't remember. I have like zero recollection of how much we've talked about this before on this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in case I never talked about it, or if you're a new listener, or you too have a brain like a sieve this time of year, we just closed on a new house that came up for sales. A friend of the family who passed away this fall, but before she passed, she's like, I really want you guys to buy this house. And it is next door to my mother-in-law, who happens to have in her backyard a barn and 20 acres of farm fields. So the plan long term is that once we sell our current house that we're living in, then we'll purchase the farm off my mother-in-law and sort of put together our little hobby farm from scratch. But like phase one is on its way. So we close today. So yeah, really big, expensive Christmas gift for ourselves.
Yeah, that's exciting though. And it sounds like in the long run, it's going to be a really special place for you all.
I think, yeah. I mean, there's like a lot of family history with this little farm because that's where my husband and sister-in-law, you know, had horses in their backyard growing up.
Nice.
I have, as an adult, never lived like basically in the shadow of the house I grew up in. So I'm assuming that that's fun for him. But we'll be right next door to my mother-in-law, who's not at all a horse person, but has told me that she's really looking forward to having horses in the yard again. So I think that's really nice. So, because the pastures will kind of run on both sides of her house. So she'll be able to see my morons looking back at her from every window, pretty much.
So. They're real nice when you just have to look at them.
Oh, I think that's her jam. Like she really enjoys looking at them in like a nice pastoral setting.
Right.
And I'll be the one out there, you know, doing the thing.
Doing the work.
Which is totally fine.
Speaking of doing the work, are you going to be packing up and moving this time of year?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we're recording this in early December. If all goes according to plan, which it won't, you know, but but we can hope. Yeah, we are hoping to like start the moving process like on our Christmas vacation. So, you know, great way to use what should be a nice restful time of year and pack everything we own, jam it in a box and then drive it 14 miles away and put it in another house. So
that's just enough distance to be frustrating.
And also, like, when we moved into this house, we've been in this house now for 10 years. This was our,
oh my goodness,
quote-unquote starter home when we were, like, little baby adults. And now we're only, like, slightly older adults. But, yeah, that was still the age where it was appropriate to, like, buy everyone sandwiches and a six-pack of beer and borrow the farm box truck to move.
And so what's the plan now?
Not doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm like, okay, listen, we're like real adults. We should probably hire movers. So, at least for some of it. Yeah, like the big furniture and stuff that like we're quote unquote too old, like too lazy to pick up and carry ourselves. Like you know what? I am happy to pay people to like take the bed apart and put the bed in a truck and then like wrap it up and like do all that and then deliver it up the stairs at the next house. So
That's
I think
nice.
We'll probably start like a slow moving process. Like I'll box up like, you know, seasonal clothes I'm not wearing and books and like, I don't want to talk about my knitting. You're part of the problem. I bought a bunch of yarn off of you, but
I know I'm not sorry, but I've
I have a whole
knitting stuff a time or two.
Yeah. At least that's in totes. I have that somewhat organized and that I'll just throw the tote in the truck and take that down myself.
Right.
So yeah, I have that. I have like a lot of house plants.
Yeah.
We've tried to not accumulate. We actually did a purge this fall. We got a dumpster because a year ago, our deck caved in under the weight of all the snow we got, which was exciting. Yeah, that memory came up on my Facebook today. So December 4th last year, I guess our porch had caved in. So with a lot of what went in the dumpster was the porch we had torn off the house and then like stacked in the corner.
Yeah.
So that was like a third of the dumpster, but then like two thirds of it was like a bunch of accumulated stuff that we weren't using that was just living in a basement. So very cathartic though to get rid of all that. Like just nobody needs that much stuff. I'm not a stuff person. So
totally. Yeah. If you haven't used it.
Right. Yeah. Like, why are you holding on to it?
Yeah. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was great. That helped. But I mean, yeah, we're going to start going through room by room and like really reveal like how embarrassing our stuff collection is. So
now in the new place, do you have to do any sort of like painting or working on anything before you get in there?
Probably. We're kind of on the fence of like, how much do we want to do versus like, let's just get the move started and then sort of tackle this like room by room. In the long run, it's going to need a fairly major kitchen reno, but that's going to be like, we're going to have to bounce back financially from the actual purchase of the house
right.
for a little while. And then, you know, once we get the farm land, then there'll be ballooning expenses over like, we're going to need a tractor. We're going to need fencing. We're going to need to seed it, you know, and all that stuff. So yeah, we have to just do a lot of like listing and budgeting, but you know, we're not strangers to that. 'Cause that's how we got in this position to be able to move on this house this quickly in the first place. So, you know, just prioritize and plan and make a couple sacrifices and keep on trucking. So
yeah, it'll be worth it. It sounds like,
I think so. And ideally this is the forever home. So we have the rest of our lives to get it just the way we want to, but
perfect. Yeah,
it'll be something. So
I'm excited.
It's a little smaller, so we definitely need to like condense some things, and I'll have stairs in my life again because this is a ranch house that we live in now. So we'll keep you updated on how many times I fall down the stairs. So
nice. It'll be good for the knees. Yeah. At least go up and down the stairs, not to fall. So
yeah, I'm a little worried. We have my little border collie is going to turn 14 this month, and homegirl does not do stairs very much anymore. So she's going to get what we call the courtesy shuttle, which is just one of us picking her up and carrying her places. So hopefully we don't fall down the stairs with the dog.
Right. Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to avoid. So
absolutely. Yeah. I believe in you. I think you're going to.
Thanks.
Yeah.
They are steep steps. And you know, our friend that lived there, she lived to be 96. Well, I think she was 97 when she passed, but she was still going up and down those steps at 96. So,
wow.
The stairs kept her young.
Yeah. Well, that's good promising sign for you, my friend.
I think so. Yeah. It's fun. I think the house was built in 1900, so it's not like super historic, you know, but it has some history to it. So,
from what
we understand, they made moonshine in the basement and then kind of ran it out the side door. So,
are you going to bring that back?
I think we, at some point when we kind of get settled, we would like to have kind of a prohibition themed party and people have to go around to the side and then maybe give a secret knock to get into the house.
Nice.
And then, we'll have some, probably some non-alcoholic drinkies because we just don't drink anymore. So weirdly, we were talking about that before we started recording somehow. Right. So we've come full circle.
Right.
We're kind of a dry household now.
Comes around, yeah.
So, but what about you? What's coming up for the holidays?
Oh, well, not much. My family is all in town, so we don't really have to go too far for that. But then my husband's family is up in Connecticut, so we'll travel up there real quick and then right back home. And it's always hard to leave, as you know, the horses behind. So it's tough to, you know, obviously I trust the girl who watches them does a great job, but it can be hard to leave.
That is like one of the hardest things about, and I realize like I'm sitting here like, oh, this is the hardest thing about keeping your own horses. And like, here I am setting myself up to have them like in the yard. But it's self-care board where I keep them on the family property anyway. So it's like same thing, just a bit of a drive to get there.
Right.
And that's the hardest part. We should figure out like some way to cover that on the podcast, like how to find a good horse sitter, because it's a big challenge.
Well, and like I live about 10 minutes from our farm too, so it
you were on the farm. Okay.
No, yeah, so we should chat about that one time, because it's a lot to do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, but, especially when there is a drive involved. Like, there's no like, oh man, roads look bad, I should stay home today. Like, that's right. Not an option.
Or like in the middle of the night, like, oh my gosh, did I leave the gate open? Let me hop in the car and, you know, make a
How
little
How many times
drive.
Have you done that?
A few.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you? Any?
So I can cheat a little bit if I think I left like a gate open or like didn't turn the electric back on or like, you know, So because it is the family farm, I can cheat a little and I can call another family member and be like, hey, yo, when you drive by, check and see if that gate's closed.
Make sure they're also there. The thing for me is we have one of the property lines of our property has been in place since the 1700s.
Oh, my gosh.
And like one side of it that's not ours is woods. Well, ash trees have been dying because of whatever the thing
the
is.
Emerald ash were.
Yes, yeah. That. And so every time it storms, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to go see if a tree's down over the fence.
Oh yeah, check your fence line. Gosh.
Yeah. Knock on wood, only the cows have gotten through. And the trees never seem to come down when there's like any sort of bad storm. It's just like some other random day. So
they just like give up and fall.
Like, right. Great. Not in the 60 mile an hour winds, but like on a nice calm day, that's a good day to go. So
today I'm spent. Yeah.
Right. All right. That's what you does do it for dream. Me more so than anything is worrying about that. But
yeah, no, that's valid.
The struggle.
And now I'm thinking about the amount of potential fence line we're going to have right along the woods. So thanks for that.
That's great. Well, you're welcome. But hey, at least you'll be there.
That's true. I will just be able to walk right out the back door.
Right. Get you some binoculars and look out the window.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I've got all these plans for like, oh, we'll put in, you know, like a bridle path. And then I'm like, if we make it wide enough, it could be like a little carriage path and I could get kind of like an off-roady type cart. And then I'd like to get a standardbred that can drive.
Absolutely.
Which I think like most of them probably can, but I don't know that I would drive Wes because he doesn't have a screw loose. I think he just like would have a bit of a flashback to like his Amish road days, and I don't need to pick that fight with him.
I mean, that might be kind of fun in a controlled setting.
Yeah, to just go like balls to the wall down the road at 100 miles an hour. That sounds great. Yeah, you. Can
I'd
come
like
on
to
up.
Try that. I'll do it.
You come on up, and we'll strap our helmets on and go.
I have no fear. So let me at it.
Nice. You know, we used to drive around the block. So because this farm we're buying used to be my father-in-law's, who passed away a few summers ago. And I was actually just telling our farrier about this today, like kind of all the fun stuff we used to do because he had his Percherons there.
Yeah.
And we would drive like, quote unquote, around the block, which, you know, in the country was like, I think 5 miles. Whoa. So we'd go up the road under the highway, hang a right, take kind of a bendy, windy road, kind of back through some farm fields, hang another right. And then we'd go past the other family farm where the horses live now. And then we'd kind of go back onto the highway again. Then we'd get onto some busy roads. So we'd kind of like dodge and dive, you know, among the cars and then sort of wing off into a neighborhood down along the lake and like do that. And then end up back at his house again. And we would do that lap a lot to get the horses legged up. But it feels a little safer to do that in a wagon because, you know, you've got like your slow moving, you know, triangle and stuff on the back and people slow down anyway, cause it's cool looking. But if you're on a horse riding, it's way scarier because people will just buzz right past you.
Oh, I bet.
So, I don't know how much road riding we'll do, but I do think if we go up the road a little bit, we can get onto some established trails that then go up over the hill. And I think we can actually ride to the old farm and we'd only be on the road a little section.
Now that's super cool.
I think that could be really cool because I do think on days where we work cattle, you know, Eric and I will just get up at dawn and saddle some horses. And, you know, not feeling too spicy, we can carry our little thermos of coffee with us and just hit the trail running. So,
oh my God.
We'll see.
Very ideal. Know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's way far in the future.
Yeah. So, something to look forward to.
Yep. Plenty to look forward to. I know. Gives me, lots of goals, lots of things.
Yeah. Stay strong.
Right. Yeah. We'll be doing a lot of listing in our future, I think.
Yeah.
Lists of things and priorities. But
right. I love it.
Yeah. So we've got a great show ahead, fun guests, a little holiday surprise for everybody at the end. So stay tuned all the way. And first, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products. Is your horse struggling with a dry, flaky, or dull coat or a brittle mane and tail? Does he have quarter cracks, toe cracks, crumbling hooves, or other hoof issues? Is he prone to losing shoes? These are the first signs of inadequate nutrition. Even horses consuming enough energy to maintain appropriate weight can be missing the vitamins, minerals, fats, and proteins needed to support tough hooves and a shiny coat. If your horse faces any of these challenges, try Careform Hoof and Coat. Careform is a scientifically formulated blend of nutrients that softens and nourishes the skin, increases natural oils in the coat, bringing out dapples and enhancing both color and sheen, and toughens hooves. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974. I've had Shorty on Careform, I think, since he's come back from his keratoma surgery, and it's actually really helped his hooves a lot. He's been on a few different hoof supplements over the years, and this one just seems to check all the boxes for him, and his hooves are really starting to grow out nice and strong. So take that for what you will, folks. Well, Lee, we have one of my favorite people in the racing industry with us this evening. We have Mike McMahon, who wears many hats in the industry. We have you on today for the Bourbon Lane partnership, but what else do you do? You've got like the bloodstock. You're also president of TCA. What else have you got going on?
Well, I mean, yeah, Jamie Hill and I are McMahon Hill Bloodstock. Started 2010. I mean, I've been doing bloodstock since 2000. Partners with my family's farm, McMahon Thoroughbreds in Saratoga. I've been TCA president for God knows how long. I think 14 years. Dan Rosenberg gave me that cross to bear. And it's been great. And yeah, president of my class at Cornell. I don't know. I can keep going. We do lots of stuff. We got horses in New Zealand now. We are horses.
Yeah, we want to learn more about the New Zealand part, because when we first reached out to you for this episode, you're like, well, hang on, I'm going to be in New Zealand. And I was like, well, wait a minute. What are you doing in New Zealand?
Yeah, we, you know, like a lot of public racing stables offering partnership things, we put an international component on the menu in probably like 2018 or 2019. I think 2018 was our first year. We actually were doing South Africa, but New Zealand is really good. I can tell you, New Zealand's made 10 positive changes for racing since we started there. And we didn't expect that. But like, meanwhile, the US is kind of like, I don't know, seems to be not making collective positive changes. Anyway, so we started doing stuff there. We bought a couple horses. We bought a near champion, sold them for a bunch of money to Hong Kong. And then we just kind of kept going on. Now we have like, I think we have 28 horses there today.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So yeah, like the New Zealand racing scene. I mean, like what are some of the big differences?
Well, it's all grass. It's right-handed or left-handed as far as the turns go when in your races. A lot of European shuttle stallions. So you've got a lot of hind legs that are a little bit different than what we're used to looking for here in the U.S. You've got a different jockey colony, obviously, with a lot of New Zealand riders, but also some great Australian riders that come over and Hong Kong riders that come in. The style of racing is a little bit different, a little bit more of a sit back and wait approach rather than a full all out blast. And there are long races. There are a lot of long races. So one of the things is to buy horses that will stay. And so all in all, it's a really balanced racing product with a good sales scheme. If you buy a horse at the big yearling sale, you got $1 million race you can run into. It's a lot of fun. We've really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's interesting. And I wonder, like, I know I've seen New Zealand bred thoroughbreds in the U.S. in second careers, and that would make sense.
There's one that won, I think, a 4-star in Maryland like 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Oh,
when
I missed
we were
that
down
one.
There, all the New Zealand people were talking about it. They were so yeah. proud of it.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking. You know, if you notice, like, just sort of style differences and, you know, the conformation and, of course, what they're breeding for, well, like, for something with more stamina on grass, that's going to...
Stereotypically, New Zealand horses are bigger... stronger, that's not the right word, bigger and have better bone than the average horse. They're bred for distance, and a lot of their sires and broodmares have proven themselves over a longer distance. I think like everywhere else, the speed component is It's the easiest thing to breed into a thoroughbred to win races is to breed mm-hmm. for speed. So I think they're kind of getting that too. But right now, they're still kind of being known for older horses, longer distances.
Mm-hmm. Which I like. Yeah, I think that would kind of relate well to a second career, like a horse that can go a little longer, right.
Exactly.
longer in his life.
Calmer temperament, distance. All those yeah. things.
Interesting. Yeah. What's the New Zealand aftercare scene like?
It's actually very good. So the president of IFAR is a New Zealander, International Forum for Aftercare of Racehorses. And the Thoroughbred Charities of America has just adopted IFAR, more or less. IFAR was started down there, and it was a Godolphin project to kind of be to model the templates for aftercare. And so, you know, TCA was approached, I think it was 2 years ago, was when I first learned about IFAR. And I admit to not being like totally on the scene about IFAR until then. But, you know, they do good work, and they put on a forum every year, usually around the big conferences in the Pacific Rim, or this year it's going to be in Saudi. Last year it was in Lexington, to model best practices so that participants can learn how to do, you know, learn how to follow best practices. So right. I think that's a New Zealand guy, and he deserves to be appreciated.
Well, that's cool. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to, usually, you know, through RRP, we participate in the virtual side when they do those conferences to kind of listen in and just see what's going on. So I'll have to keep an ear out for the New Zealand take this year. That's cool.
Yeah, they're definitely, they're pretty, I would say they're ahead of the game a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. We'll have to see, yeah, what we can learn from them and kind of apply mm-hmm. to the US model. That's something I've always done on this show. You know, sometimes I get us in the weeds talking about sort of the business end of aftercare and just like how different it is in other places and like what else we could be doing in the US, you know, to just better, not like codify aftercare, but, you know, just kind of like make it more part of the horse's life cycle. And that's where it's really interesting, you know, that you have an aftercare section right on your website for
yeah.
everything you're doing. So how did you kind of like just work aftercare into your system?
Well, I mean, as president of the TCA, you've got to, I don't know, I assume that everyone that's involved with aftercare has to lead by example, right? So for many years, even before TCA, I was already claiming our horses that we'd owned or bred that were in kind of that lower level range, maybe under 10,000, place where I start to get uneasy. And, you know, I was doing it with my money and Natanya's money. That was, her and I were claiming back these horses. And of course you're wiring money here and wiring money there, and you're trying to claim them or buy them. And it was become, with the number of horses that we have, it was becoming a little bit, you know, we'd have $50,000 out, and you're trying to claim one in Golden Gates, you're trying to claim one in Ohio, and you're trying to claim one in West Virginia. And, you know, you got to have money in the accounts. You got to be ready. And it's just a little bit like, why are we the only ones doing this? And the thing that was interesting was that once we would claim a horse, and I would put it out to my partners and friends, I mean, we would immediately raise the money. I mean, all of us are good people. Like, it's not like people are not like wanting to do this. It's just not easy.
Right.
So then I was like, well, what am I missing here? And I asked Erin Halliwell at TCA, she's the executive director, like, why don't racing stables form 501(c)s so their partners can contribute to funds tax-free so that we can claim the horses back? And she's like, well, it's really not that hard to start a 501(c). So I asked Kristen Stivers, who's our CFO now at Bourbon Lane, McMahon Hill, like, I was like, can you start a 501(c)? And she's like, yeah, I think it'll take a couple months, but I'm sure we can do it. So I was like, let's do it.
Right.
Like, what are we waiting for? Why isn't everyone in the horse racing industry telling every other racing stable to do this? So we did it. And we opened it up to our partners. We immediately had $25,000 to spend on claiming our horses back.
That's amazing.
Now we have $100,000 to spend. And we just claimed back or retired, rehomed, retrained our 30th horse this week.
30th. Wow.
30th horse. Well, so, you know, not like that. Look, we've raised a lot of horses and trained a lot of horses and bred a lot of horses. Like, I mean, the big thing about this was that all of our partners, no matter if they were in for $10,000 or $100,000, like I'm talking about people like Maggie Seidman, who's an absolute aftercare pillar. Like, some of these people, they just want to, they just needed an avenue.
Right.
And so we gave them an avenue, and they put that money in, and they knew it was going to go just to their horses, which is a real positive. Some people don't want to give it to big groups because they still are going to get asked about contributing when their horse is in a bad spot.
Right, right, yeah.
Right, so this way they have a targeted way to take care of their own horses, and we administer it. We take care of it. And yeah, it's been, I wish every racing stable, I hope this gets 100,000 views, just this 1 2-minute piece. If every racing stable would do this in the country, we could practically take care of the 10% of horses that get in bad spots.
Right. Like, well, and I think that's so really key, right? It's not every horse that ends up in that position.
It's not even 1 in 10. It's 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 that gets in that spot. But having the funds together so it doesn't land on somebody's shoulders who's underfunded to do the right thing is the game changer. Like, every horse should have a social security where there's money behind there, where the jockey club or TAA or whatever can take care of it. I love that idea. But at the end of the day, it's on us. And if we all build this in our own little businesses and we have a template for it, like, it's so easy. You know, it's so damn easy. So yeah, we'll still have a horse get biased. Like, we've got a couple horses, we don't know where they went. And I hope they're retired somewhere nice and safe. Like, we were in touch with the trainers. It was all lined up. But you know, that's the kind of the hard part. And I love the Jockey Club chip program. I feel like it's going to be easier to track these horses. But, you know, hey,
yeah, like everything else, it's not a perfect system. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it's hard to build a perfect system because we just will never know.
There's always a little crack in the net somewhere. So, yeah, I think the answer for me was, like, instead of doing this myself, let me figure out a way to get all my partners involved.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And I have to imagine that they like knowing, you know, that they've sort of bought into that future security for that horse themselves, right? Because everyone is there as a horse person.
I mean, I hope we're leading by example.
Yeah. And I think what, you know, equestrians tend to get in a little bit of a rut where they think that the way that they interact and love and appreciate their horse is the only way. And I think the racing industry loves and appreciates and interacts with its horses in a way that is also deeply appropriate and deeply horse-centered. And it's just not the same way that the second career owner, you know, that goes out and brushes it and rides it every day. It's not the same way that they interact with it, but that doesn't make it any less right or wrong. You know, this is like everyone, we're all here for the horses. We're just approaching it from different ways.
I think Stuart Pittman was right. I remember Stuart Pittman, Dan Rosenberg, and I sitting on Carolyn Carlson's patio in Saratoga when Stuart was starting the RRP. And Stuart said, no matter how much money you can raise, you're never going to solve the problem if you don't create demand for second careers. Mm-hmm. And if you create demand for second careers, the horse won't need to go onto Social Security. I'm using quotes on my camera here. Right. But, you know, like, if you can put that horse on the dole at age 15 or 17 rather than age 7, you solve the problem.
Right.
Right. Like why should demand for a sound, solid 5-year-old gelding be zero? Right. Like, you have to make demand. If you make demand, that horse goes to a second career. And you know what? I mean, a lot of second career horses end up being that's their forever home.
Right.
Because a girl, a family, a boy, whatever, it doesn't matter, falls in love with a horse and he lives in their paddock. And he might live in some little 2-acre paddock on the back of their house forever, like a pet. Like, why wouldn't we want to foster that in American racing? Why wouldn't that be the best thing ever? So my whole goal is to create, you know, after that meeting, Dan was still the president of the TCA. Dan thought we need to get in front of this. I was fully committed as well. And we started being the title sponsor of the RRP.
Yeah, which of course, that RRP, we deeply appreciate that. You know, that's been a long partnership for, well, what, 10 years now? More than that, because we've
I don't know. I think more. I don't remember.
I think more too. Yeah. But we've had the.
It has to be more because
the makeover in that current format has been 10 years. So. But yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense to consider what we call quote unquote aftercare, right? Like that word even has connotations of like, oh, it's racing first and then something else, right? Like aftercare almost implies that like something's gone awry. But to sort of embrace that just as like part of your doing business to me makes so much sense. And even from a straight business perspective, right? Like you've made it so that your partners all get the tax benefits of making a donation too.
So like, otherwise they would be sending money to help. And, you know, like that's not good planning. Like that's not how you do these things. Like when you set up a business, you know that you're going to pay for the aftercare in some way. You know, if you don't get into business and someone hasn't trained you, that's part of the Urban Lane stable, then you're kind of setting them up for, oh, by the way, you owe another $500 to help pay for this. Like, that shouldn't be a surprise. That should be part of the model. That should be what we all think about when we buy a horse or breed a horse. And believe me, it's tough. Like, we've had horses, you know, that we've bred that end up in Puerto Rico and God knows everywhere else. And, you know, we breed a lot of horses every year. And somebody needs to breed them. I mean, like, it's not like everybody's like jumping in line to breed 100 mares a year, but my family does. We probably breed 150 between us all. Wow. But, you know, like, nobody's jumping in line to be a breeder. And then they call you up and they say, hey, I just rescued your horse in some place you've never heard of, and you need to send $1,000. Well, look, it gets pretty it gets like, oh my God. And then of course there's a lot of drama and you got to wire the money. It almost feels like a fraud. and I don't love it at all. I, when it happens, you're just like, oh my gosh, all we do for everything we do. And then you still get this.
Right.
So we've got to, as a group, and I think I love where Pat Cummins and Mike Rapoli are, to be honest, like we're so close to having this thing solved, but there's, you know, as an industry, if we build that demand, we will get these horses. Market forces will keep these horses from ending in bad spots.
Right.
And I really hope Carrie Brogdon is successful with what she's doing. Do you know about that?
Yeah. We need to have her on to talk about that because I know she's developing some.
I mean, I don't. She's got a really big vision plan. She wants to do Hunter Derbies, so everybody's listening is caught up with us. And a Hunter Derby is like, it'll be a restricted class for thoroughbreds only, and it'll be $100,000 purse. Mm. And she wants to build like a sort of a Sweet 16 tournament approach to a big purse. And she's got a lot of really big people that are excited about this idea. But, you know, I think the industry needs to get behind it. Like this shouldn't be 8 or 10 people talking about this. It should be the leadership of major organizations, you know, and that's where we're going to really solve it. It's like the Rubik's Cube. I feel like we got the top two levels. We got the top and the top two levels. And now we're just trying to figure out the third level at the bottom, you know, like trying to fix it. And, you know, I think Carrie's onto a great thing. I really think the answer is demand. I think it's creating demand.
Yep. That's where we come in.
That's where you come in. That's what you do. You guys are the starter. And I think the way to go from here is like, how do you take that first level demand into demand that how can that horse become 15 or 20,000 after the makeover and turn into 50 or 100,000?
Right. Yeah, that is an ongoing challenge.
How do you keep pushing?
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, that's what people are paying for these top-end warm bloods and quarter horses. So why not? Why not the thoroughbred?
Why not us? Exactly. Right. Why not us?
We got to get there. So, Mike, we have to ask, what came first, the bourbon or the thoroughbreds?
Oh, thoroughbreds. I was born on a thoroughbred farm. If you're raised in New York, like, beam me up, Scotty, was the most I knew about bourbon. And that was like age 17. So that would have been. Definitely did not know about bourbon before thoroughbreds. Knew much more about horses.
So how does this work with the Pinhook line of bourbons? Because I know that there's horses in your barn have bourbons named after them, or are they named after the bourbons first?
So Jamie Hill deserves all the credit for Bourbon Lane. Well, for the Pinhook bourbon, I should say. We started Bourbon Lane together, and it was kind of funny, actually. My friend Jim Winnick and I were doing bourbon tasting, and I was driving back on this like really beautiful like fall day, and it was gorgeous. And I was just like, why isn't anyone doing a stable involved with bourbon? And I was like, oh, well, I should. So I rebranded my racing stable, which had like three horses and seven partners, from McMahon and Hill Bloodstock Racing Stable to Bourbon Lane. No, to Bourbon Trail. Excuse me, Bourbon Trail. And I got a cease and desist the next day from and then I was like, well, all right. So I named it Bourbon Trace. I sent in a new thing. And I got a cease and desist from Buffalo Trace.
Jeez.
And so then
these
I
are
was
little
like, Bourbon Lane, final win. And they took it. So I was like, good, now we're done. So now we did Bourbon Lane. So then we were racing a couple of horses. They didn't have bourbon names. Like our first good horse was a filly named Elegant Finish. They had bourbon themed names.
Yeah, I was like, that's close. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. They had bourbon themed names. And Jamie Hill's friend Jay Peterson had some bourbon. He had bought it many years before, maybe at least 8 years before. And he had called Jamie and he said, I think I want to start a bourbon label. And Jamie said to me, he said, do you think we could give them our horses' names to kind of help the marketing of that? Like, would that be cool? And I was like, hell yes. And so that was how we got involved with Pinhook. And Pinhook's been great. I mean, honestly, it's just fun to be part of a bourbon label, and it's been successful. It's in 32 states now. Actually, I don't know. It could be 34. I don't keep track, but it's over 30 right now. I don't think the climate's great for bourbon right now. Jamie keeps telling me it is, but I'm really, really happy that Pinhook has great leadership that wants to be more involved with racing and aftercare. They're going to do a special release. Tell all your podcast members, they're going to do what's called a double barreled bourbon. So it's going to come out of one barrel. It's going to go back into a barrel, like a different char. And it's going to be sold at cost. Everything over cost is going to be donated to the Bourbon Lane Stable Retirement Fund.
Awesome.
And we think it's a $50,000 fundraiser. It might be a $100,000 fundraiser. I don't really know what these things are, how good it's going to go or what it's going to be. But cheers to Pinhook Bourbon for chipping in on retiring our horses.
Also, A+ on the metaphor there, the double barreled.
It's a double barrel.
Yeah, I love that. That's genius.
Yeah. I can't take credit for that. Probably that's either Jamie Hill or Sean Josephs came up with that.
Super smart. I love that.
Very
and sharp. I know that there is one named for Bourbon War who did the makeover, which brings our total of alcohols named for makeover horses up to 2. So if we were going to have a makeover bar, we would have Bourbon War.
Is that 2? Only 2?
As far as we know. So we know that there's the Bourbon War Pinhook, and then we also know there's a beer for Talk Show Man at a microbrewery in Maryland. So
well, you're forgetting Bourbon Creed then. He just was in it last year before for University of Colorado's group.
Oh, Does he have one too? Okay, great. This is good. So we can open our bar with two bourbons and a beer.
Hashtag bourbon. I think Bourbon Lane might have had four contestants in the
Dang. Okay, I got to look and write this down.
Right now.
Yeah, when we open the makeover bar, that's going to be our...
Yeah, yeah. You need Pinot bourbon and a lot of it.
Yeah, for real. I love it. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. This has been super fun. I love... you know, the Bourbon Lane take on aftercare. And I agree, you know, lead the industry, lead the way. Where can people learn more about Bourbon Lane Stable if they want to get involved?
Obviously, you can go to our website, mcmahonhill.com. If you want to, if you're more interested in TCA, go to tca.org or just call me 859-983-7617.
Oh, just putting it right out there. All right. I love it.
Yeah, I'm available.
Love it. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Are you ready to embark on the thoroughbred makeover journey with a recently retired racehorse? Lee and I have both competed and it really was life-changing. Applications are now open for drafting at therrp.org through January 4th and open for submission starting on January 5th through the 23rd. Learn more about applying to the thoroughbred makeover at therrp.org/apply.
Well, we're here with Aaron McDonald from New Vocations Ocala Branch today. And hopefully, Aaron, everybody's gotten their New Vocations Thoroughbreds for Christmas. This is coming out Christmas Day. So I was wondering what would be some reasonable things for folks to expect within like the first week or so after getting these Thoroughbreds?
Well, I think the best thing to take into account here when you get your new thoroughbred home would be to give them some grace and be understanding of everything changing from the people that are around them to their feed to their schedule. So I think it's really important that you don't have high expectations and that you are just letting your horse. We typically say give them a week or two to kind of adjust and settle in. So I think that would be the biggest thing. It's not necessarily having expectations. It's just giving them some grace to kind of settle in, sort of get their bearings. I think for some of our older horses, it certainly is a little bit easier. But for some of the babies that maybe haven't been to the races or haven't been to many farms, perhaps, it's just something that we like typically see that they do need a little bit of time to just kind of take a breath and get sort of settled into their new routine, their new people. I had heard something at one point that kind of resonated with me, that it's like going to a different country where no one speaks your language. It's a big adjustment. And so I think for a lot of our adopters or just anyone getting horses off the track, I think it's like pretty easy to get worried about maybe some behaviors that they typically don't exhibit, or if they seem a little bit anxious or worried. I think that's all completely fair. And I think it's just a matter of giving them some time, taking the pressure off. Some horses need a couple days and some horses need those 2 weeks. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just being patient with them.
Absolutely. It's never a good thing when you rush a horse. It never works out well. But I like your thing about going to a foreign country. Definitely can see how that relates.
Yeah. And I think like, don't rush yourself too, right? Like, you know, because I think like a lot of us, myself mostly, would panic, you know, like, oh, this horse isn't settling in 3 days. I better call Aaron and be like, you have to take this horse back.
Yeah, I think there is definitely some anxiety on both sides, maybe, of the new partnership. And again, like kind of the older horses, I feel like typically they're a little more worldly. If you're getting maybe a 3-year-old or sometimes you have 2-year-olds that come through the program, it is an adjustment. So I think it's just a matter of like, I'll get an email or a call from an adopter and they're like, oh my gosh, they're doing this. And it's like, okay, well, that maybe didn't happen here. Like, why don't we just give them a day, maybe make some small adjustments. And then 9 times out of 10, it's like, oh, okay. Like that kind of stopped, you know, we're fine. So I think it's just try to stay calm, I think, as a new owner or an adopter. And then like, cause I think your horses too, like certainly they're pretty in tune with that. So I think it's like, with the new people around them, I think if everything's cool, you know, they're getting their time and everyone's just being patient about the whole process, I think everyone's kind of better for it.
I like that. And then too, like, you know, if like, especially if you got this horse like for the makeover, so you're thinking like, I'm running out of time to train, you know, I think you can still have like structured downtime. 100%. You know, like get the horse out and do some in-hand work and show him the arena, show him the spaces he's going to have, but you don't necessarily have to saddle up and get right to work under saddle right away too. So
yep.
Love that. All right. Well, speaking of delightful baby horses, you have sent us an absolutely lovely young man for our featured horse. Tell us a little bit about Blue Got In.
So Blue is an absolute saint of a three-year-old. He's one that typically a lot of our adopters, when they're looking for really laid back, uncomplicated horse, they typically will certainly question me when I'm sending them a three-year-old to consider. But he is like kind of wise beyond his years. He's one that is well-traveled. He fits in really well in a bunch of different scenarios, whether that's individual turnout, in a group. He's very easygoing. He's about the sweetest horse we have at the farm. He'll meet you up at the fence every day. And he's just one that is going to be a little bit limited because of some throat surgeries. But he, like, he's sound, he's happy, he's living his best life. There's been like some concern about his suitability to do certainly like a harder job, a more strenuous job because of some exercise intolerance, but to hit the trails or to be just a wonderful kind of family horse or just kind of a almost a backyard pleasure horse, he would be a wonderful addition. He's the best boy we keep. That's his kind of nickname around the barn. It's hard to believe he's as young as he is.
I'm watching his video now and he is just like, one, two around your ring. Like he's just so happy.
Yeah, he's lovely. So he's one that, yeah, there doesn't need to be concern. There's a couple little management things with his throat, but to like go out and enjoy just having a horse around that you would enjoy. It's 100% him. He's been one of our favorites in the program.
So, and that's interesting because like I've seen a lot of like, oh, low impact because this horse like had like a tendon or like something, you know, in the leg is usually what we think of, but the throat surgery isn't quite as common, or at least doesn't seem as common for a horse that we come across. So as far as like, you know, like intense exercise, so that's like, maybe don't take him galloping cross country. Like what all does that include?
Yeah. Yeah. I think anything that we would like typically say like moderate, like the upper end of moderate, to like a high impact career. So he is one that like essentially he's just going to have like some irritation and cough. Like there's a little bit of really that's going to be like the only limiting factor with him is that he's just necessarily not getting the air that he would require to do a tough job. But to like walk, trot around and like I said, go down trails, kind of do that sort of thing, he's fantastic. I mean, he's brave, he's quiet. So like for a lot of our adopters that would really be looking for something like that, the little management things day to day, they're pretty minor.
I love these pictures of him. He just looks like such, he's a little in that lanky stage. So this is one of those ones that'll be really cool to see what he looks like in a few years, you know, when he's adopted, hopefully by a listener and finds a great home.
And he's got the sweetest little face.
He does have a very sweet face. Yeah. So I am not like an equine color genetics expert. I know like just enough to be kind of dangerous, but his bay coloring is really interesting because he doesn't have like the stark, like black at the knee on down. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that someone is going to know a lot more than me as a listener and will send me an email and correct me, but I feel like that's called wild bay. It's like a variation on bay. Mm. And it sort of extends the brown a little further down, and it's interesting to like see it on a real horse. Cool looking dude.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
And he's a kitten's joy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at that. So yeah, they have a great reputation just for overall, like I think people find them really nice to work with. I know they're usually sought out for sport, which of course is maybe not, you know, high on this guy's list of priorities for something intense, but still, if you want a kitten's joy without, you know, having to go gallop cross country for miles and miles and miles, this is the route.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he could do any job, like any job, you know, within the realm of like trail horse. I mean, I'm sure even to like kind of go maybe 180 from what we typically think of, but like kind of a nice little ranch horse to kind of ride around. Like he's very cool. And I think for a horse that's so young to have such like a mature demeanor is just not always the easiest to find. So I think someone will, a very lucky adopter will really enjoy interacting with him day to day.
Love it. Well, Aaron, where can we find Blue God Inn and all the other fabulous horses you have down in Ocala?
Yep. So you can find everyone on our website, newvocations.org. It is actually going to be our horses are by facility. So you can take a look. He'll be under the Florida tab and he is available there for adoption. You will need to be approved with us. So all those steps are online under the adopt tab. Also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have all of our social accounts. So you can kind of follow the horses along. I think we've got a great TikTok. So yeah, definitely check us out.
You guys have the most fun social. It is so fun to window shop there. So
we do
highly recommend everybody giving those guys a follow. Well, thanks very much, Aaron, and Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. Same to you guys.
You can enjoy your favorite equine videos all in one place with Ride TV, the ultimate equine streaming platform. The newly relaunched Ride TV has all the series you love, like Rockstar Vets and Mini Horses, plus top-tier training videos and event footage from BarrelRacing.com and Horse and Rider On Demand. Whether you're ready to relax with your favorite series, binge watch competition footage, or train with a world champion, subscribe to Ride TV today for only $19.99 to see where your ride takes you. Visit RideTVGo.tv to subscribe.
Well, we are very excited to reveal our secret holiday guest. We have with us Joy. Joy to the world. She's back.
Hi, guys. Merry Christmas.
I just thought of that. I feel very clever. Joy to the world.
Very good. Very timely.
Yeah. Yes. Very festive. It's Christmas Day. Did you get that a lot? Christmas is growing up?
Yes. Great. I will also say, I think I've shared it before with listeners if you're like an OG, but growing up, because my name was on everything in Christmas, I just assumed any wrapping paper that had Joy on it was for me.
Oh.
Any bag that had Joy on it was for me. And it, as a child, honest mistake.
Yeah, well, fair.
As it should be, you know?
Yes.
It's fine. It's Joy's world. We're all just living in it.
Right.
100%.
I'm just kidding. All right. So first Christmas with the babes.
What
are we looking forward to? Just the whole thing.
The whole thing. One, not wrapping presents because they don't know what's happening.
Mm,
I'm not that fun mom. I chose sanity instead of Instagram.
I love it.
But it was actually really fun, like shopping for kids for once. And I don't know if anyone else has felt this way. Having kids has changed my whole perspective on holidays. Like, I want to do all the fun things, like make everything a winter wonderland. Take them out to Frankenmuth, Michigan, which is like the Christmas center of the state. It's Christmas all year round there. Yes. Very German town. Very fun.
That makes sense.
Yes. So if you're touring, recommend. It's a good time. There's great fried chicken. But yeah,
it says Christmas like fried chicken. Yeah.
Okay. I know. But yeah, I just like want to do all the cutesy things, decorate my house, like all gimmicky, all suburbia. It's changed my perspective. I didn't do any of those things because postpartum, but next year, look out.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, the desire and the actual doing it, those are two different things. That's totally fair. Yeah, I also regularly, I'm like, I'm going to decorate. This will be the year I send Christmas cards. And it has yet to happen. And I don't have children. So
I wanted to do Christmas cards with a dog and then two newborns and a dog that's operating on a brain cell and a half. Just maybe with AI, but not organically.
I have really enjoyed I've enjoyed all the updates that you sent me about the whole fam, about Helena and Archer, and then also the reappearance of the dog, which has been a delight because she seems like a real genius.
She's literally staring at me right now. Like, are you talking about me? She's the exact opposite of my last German Shepherd, and like I said, she's been described at daycare as a golden retriever trapped in a German Shepherd's body, but with ADHD.
Oh, I was like, oh, that sounds nice. Oh, maybe not.
Super social, super fun, but we have zero impulse control.
But good with the children, right? So
yes, she does like walking with her stroller. That's the one thing she knows how to focus on.
Okay, good thing to focus on, though. Like, we don't need her upending the stroller.
No.
Right.
And flinging your children into a snowdrift. So
she has started storing her toys though in like the little catch-all on the stroller. So Zach is disgusted by it. I find it endearing.
Oh, well, Zach, it's a good thing Zach never saw my sister-in-law's stroller then, because we used that thing as like an all-terrain vehicle on the farm and like a storage unit. Like we had calf poles and chains and like lubricants, you know, so if you have to reach into a cat, like all of that was stored in the stroller. Like we used the crap out of that thing. Like that thing went off-roading, that thing went into the pasture. Like
expensive at one point, as they are, you have
to. Why not? I was like, we're using the bejesus out of this thing. And
yeah,
we should have like shot like an ad campaign with it, because that thing like went to the top of the cow pasture.
I love it.
Then like, this is why I didn't get asked to babysit, right? Because I was like, what happens if we let it go from here? And they were like, no.
I was like, whatever,
it's fine. I did also one day to babysit, because my sister-in-law had to run off and check something like down the pasture. And she's like, can you just hang out with him in the stroller? And I was like, sure. So there's this great picture, I think it's on my Instagram, of like, I've turned the stroller towards one of our nicer cows, and the cow is just looking at the baby, and the baby's looking at the cow. And dude, I have never been asked to babysit since then. So I'm ready.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely being safer than I am someday. So.
Oh no. Have they gone to the barn yet? Have they seen the horses?
No, and that is the downside of having babies in like a fall, winter time in the north. I had a whole day set for it, and then Archer, love him, so sweet, was pooping his pants like no other. I was like, I'm not doing blowouts at the barn. We do not have changing stations that a cat or a mouse has not been on.
So. Yeah, you don't want to just lay him down on the barn aisle, so...
No, and I also feel like he didn't want me to take his pants off when it was like 40 degrees. So I opted to not do that day. And then like winter hit immediately and I was like,
yeah, winter's really kind of hit this year, huh?
Like it did, which is great for the holidays because we like when it has snow on Christmas. But, you know, besides that, I figured why they don't need to see it. They can't even appreciate it right now. Like they're just waking up to the world. And Astrid is living her most feral, lovely life. So
good.
She's
we're gonna have to get feral. A check-in with her in the spring. Be like, yes, Astrid.
She's been taken care of by teenagers primarily, and a couple lovely students of mine who just, you know, give her snacks, make sure she's alive, change out her blankets. But for the most part, she's rotund. So yes, thoroughbreds can become rotund on pasture. Fun fact. breaking stereotypes all day, and she doesn't believe that she is a tamed horse. She comes for me, so I feel very like spirit stallion of the Cimarron energy when I go out there. Like she runs up to me, but she has to be bribed by everybody else.
She's loving her feral girl winter.
Yes, her best
life. That's
the
flip side of hot girl summer. Feral girl winter.
That's right.
It's true. So.
May we all embrace a little Astrid in our lives. I think we could all use a little feral girl winner.
If anything, she's just, you know, a woman who has found her own. She's full confidence. It's great.
It's what we all desire to be.
She really is. Yeah. She really is.
Well, how about you?
How like, about you know, me?
Found your motherhood, found your confidence in your feral woman self?
Honestly, yes. Everyone warned me about baby blues. And if you have experienced them, totally normal from what I've heard. I did not get baby blues. I was very prepared. I was waiting for it this whole time. I'm 8 weeks in. Nothing's happened yet. I don't know. I think I'm riding my high of being highly aggressive against the medical system for my entire pregnancy and delivery.
That's right. Yeah, you made some like last minute changes, right? I remember
that. I did. I changed hospitals like 3 days before my water broke. So
you know what? That's good. Good for you. Get what you need.
Yeah. I told my doctor, he was fired, found somebody else, and had a great delivery. You know, snaps for everyone. We'll do it again.
Nice.
Puppy. I'm podcasting. Okay.
It's fine. She's got a couple weeks to get back in the swing of it before you're back.
It's true. Honestly, it's a gift for the listeners that my life is not perfect and I'm not together, but it's fine.
Are we ever together? This is how this podcast works. This one just runs by the seat of its pants, baby.
It's true. But, you know, I'm doing good overall, like getting back in the swing of things, trying to find routine, excited to come back podcasting regularly, although I am trying to scheme how we keep Lee around more because she's doing phenomenal. You were just amazing. You're a peach.
Well, thank you, Joy. It's been really fun. So
No, you're
been able
now.
To help you out.
No one else I would have left Kristen with.
Wow.
And if anyone has complaints about that and feels offended, don't email me on it.
Yeah, she's not checking it.
No, I really don't.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I'm the one that can't be left on her own, so I'm the problem, really.
Oh,
that's not true. But I'm excited. It's great that it's like the holidays. Everything's chill. Everyone's like winding down the nicest time. Like everyone's nice this time of year. And then like around like January 4th to 6th, they're just nasty. Don't understand the energy, but I hope
you know, start the new year out terrible. That's what I always say. Start it out with an attitude, probably.
And it can only get better.
I guess it's because you have to hold yourself accountable, right? Because you set goals for yourself. Speaking of, do you two have goals for the new year?
No.
I love it. Why? Why have it if you don't need it?
Yeah, this would be our annual episode where Joy and I normally sit and very nicely are like, here's my goals for the next year. Make it through. I'd like to sell, you know, so yeah, like big news today. We bought a house. So I'd like to sell this house in 2026, the one that I'm currently sitting in, then we can get this farm thing rolling. So that's a goal. I'm gonna go with that. That's not really a resolution. That's just a thing I want to do. But
I think it's fine to not necessarily do resolutions. I feel like we just set goals last year. Yeah. Like you started your business and you like kept on it all year.
Right. Yeah. I've written a book. I'm rewriting it. It's not published. I'm just going to rewrite it over and over again until I die. Like Sisyphus pushing this book up a hill.
Yeah.
You know, I've done plenty. I'm fine. I'm good. We keep on carrying on. Lee, what about you? Lee's got goals. I can feel
it. Lee's got goals because she's got horses with goals.
She's got horses that are sound and young.
Yes.
Sound now after the big abscess.
This is true.
But so I guess one goal is to do a freestyle with Finn because we got a score at the last show last year to do one. And so we only need two more scores for our bronze medal, and those would be our third level scores. So hopefully by the end of next year, we will have accomplished that. So cross your fingers for Finny too.
Hell yeah. Hold us accountable. I love it.
I will be cheering you on. Send us the content so listeners can cheer you on too.
Yes, right. Definitely. So fingers crossed. We'll see. You never know.
I love it. And how's your baby doing?
Oh, she's huge. She's bigger than Finn. Yeah. She's a good girl. She's actually really lighter in color this winter. So hopefully, you know, it'll be interesting to see what she looks like in the spring. But I think she's going to be fun, like total different personality than Finn. She's kind of like a gelding in a mare's body. Yeah, it's nice to have somebody who doesn't want to fight you all the time. So,
look, I said it earlier today to my farrier. I love a dumb himbo gelding. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. But like, I was a mare person, but there's just something very easy about those dummies. So.
Yeah,
gelding people who have smart geldings are going to be really mad at me. And I have Jobber. He's very smart too, but he's still a gelding. So
there is something about just the agreeableness of them.
Yeah, I can't relate, guys. I need the chaos to operate.
That's fair, but
you don't have enough chaos right now.
So sometimes life's hard.
You added two babies to your household
and a puppy.
And a puppy. Yeah,
you went hard, Joy.
I almost got a horse for a push present, but I slowed myself down.
Is that your 2026 goal?
I don't know.
Get the horse.
Do it.
Honestly, we're going to take it slow. So
that's probably
my goals for 2026 is I'm actually just going to get back into lessons. My goal is at least once a month, if not twice a month. I'm trying to be realistic with children. Children who can't hold their own heads up.
Not yet.
Not yet. They'll get there. Actually, I'll get back to that because my children scare me. Come back to that. And then my second goal is I also started a business. So trying to get that up and running in 2026. Because if I hit my monthly goals, then I'm going to award myself a horse.
Whoop, whoop.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. Can't wait to follow
that. Very exciting.
That's super exciting.
Yes. So hopefully that all pans out if I figure out. Because, you know, why not start a business while you have infants?
It's a perfect time.
And you haven't even made it through your first year of marriage, but I'm real close.
No better time than now. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You said you wanted to come back. Your children scare you. They are 50% Zach. So
they're also 50% me.
Yeah. That's a potent combination, my dear.
Really, really should have thought that through. Yeah. My children as the time we're recording this, they're 8 weeks. By the time you're listening to this, they're 12. So they've officially hit their almost 3-month mark. But there's milestones that they're hitting that they shouldn't be hitting. They're weirdly strong children.
Oh.
Like,
they're supposed to be grazing now, right? Right? Like, they're supposed to be taking in their first nibbles of grass.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I got it. I'm here.
But yeah, like, they're not supposed to, like, they're doing tummy time, right? And they're supposed to be able to hold their head up for, like, a couple seconds or even, like, a minute. No, my kids can, like, full seal. One is trying to, like, push herself and crawl, but she can't because her head weighs more than the rest of her body. Oh. But she's trying really hard. They can roll over already. They're laughing. They're not supposed to start laughing yet.
Oh, wow. There's something sinister about that. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. Or just really funny, Joy. So.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
I guess. I feel like I'm crying a lot in front of them. So it's concerning.
Maybe they think they're crying and they're actually, or maybe they think you're laughing.
Maybe. Maybe. But
this is super fun. Lee and I don't have kids, so we have nothing to compare this to.
Right.
We're like, yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah. Great. Laughing. Super.
And then my son, who is the cutest little like peanut ever because he's in the one percentile. He's only like 8 pounds right now. But he has like, the emotional intelligence, like more emotional intelligence than most grown men.
Mm.
Good.
Yeah. Not hard.
Great.
Not hard.
I mean, the bar is low, but yeah.
But I'm like, the fact that he like tries to have a conversation with you, he can only make two sounds. It's ah and oh.
Oh.
That Those seems are the two sounds very advanced though.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
That's you great. Can like say ah and he'll say ah back and he'll say oh back if you say oh. But oh. He'll wow. like respond to conversation. I will send a video to Kristen because she's better at posting on social media than I am these days. But there, I have a video of him asking what he wants for Christmas and he's responded.
Did he say pony? A horse?
Yeah. I did ask about a pony. I asked about a dojo. Zach does jujitsu. Yeah. He's quite the character. So I'm scared of my children. I don't understand the milestones that have been set by the doctor anymore. The doctor's also afraid of my children. So,
wow.
Perfect. Yes. Great. You've made some super babies that are going to come and rule us all.
Yes. Yes. So watch out, 2026. Not sure what I just brought in to the world. But they're cute.
At least they're cute. We have that.
They're cute.
Well, Joy, it was lovely to catch up for the holidays, and we'll talk to you again. You'll be coming back on in the new year, so everybody can look forward to the return of Joy in 2026. We've got a couple episodes left with Lee, and then Joy will be easing out of that maternity leave and back into the show.
You know, and I'll get to share about what it's like to ride horses after you lose your core strength completely.
Oop. Yeah, well, there is that. To be fair, I don't think I ever had any core strength, so, you know.
Right. It's all imaginary anyway.
Core strength is a scam.
Right.
Core strength, that's just a construct. Yeah,
it's not even
invented
real.
By Hallmark to sell cards.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on as a guest. It was a great time. Merry Christmas to you both.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Joy. You can find our show notes and links to today's guest on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram, just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram at hotgirlsummer.ottb, and that's girl with a U. My email address is rbeamer95@gmail.com.
I've never asked you, what does the R stand for?
Regan.
Is that your actual name?
It was until I dropped it.
Oh, I like Lee.
Yeah,
I like Regan too. But
yeah.
All right. Mind blown. Love that. Thanks for filling me in.
You're welcome.
You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Writer, and my email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and Ride TV, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
Always embrace your chestnut mare
and cowside leg.